Hello and welcome. My name is John August.
Okay. My name is Craig Mazin.
And you're listening to episode 718 of Script Notes. It's a podcast about screenwriting and things that are interesting to screenwriters. Today on the show, you may have heard us discuss industry euphemisms, but really, no worries if not. At the end of the day, we're bumping this just in case it got buried. So whether you're coming up for air after the holidays or just getting your ducks in a row, we want to be respectful of everyone's time as we discuss stock phrases that are endemic to Hollywood.
Mm.
We'll also run down the numbers on Script Notes, both the podcast and the book. We'll answer listener questions, including, what's the deal with video podcasts?
What is the deal?
And in our bonus segment for premium members, how do you deal with a difficult collaborator? We'll talk about that. Because we have no experience, but we're just in theory, what would it be like to deal with a difficult collaborator, Greg? In theory.
It's entirely theoretical.
It's all entirely theoretical. This episode we're recording on December 14th, but it's coming out enough later that there was news, but the news is going to be so outdated by the time we actually air this episode. So yeah. Disney made a deal with OpenAI to license characters and give OpenAI $1 billion.
Yeah. Notice that.
Paramount is now doing a hostile bid for Warner Brothers.
Yep.
We don't know how that's all going to sort out. So
That won't have changed by the time this episode comes out. That's going to take a while. Yeah.
It's going to take a while.
Yeah.
Everything's going to take a while.
Everything will take some time.
Yeah. So everything. I'm not delighted by any of this news, frankly.
No. In general, we don't want fewer entities that pay for our work.
Yeah.
But it's happening.
It's happening. On the whole, I'm not excited by, you know, companies that distribute our product, making deals with AI companies to train models on our stuff.
Yeah,
don't love that.
Really, really don't like that. It's interesting. I was reading about this.
Yeah.
So Disney, I think, probably is looking and saying, hey, people are going to be using this to take Iron Man and do stuff. So we want to just get paid for it. So what we'll do is we'll just let you have Iron Man. It's a little bit like the music industry saying to Spotify, okay, we'll let you have it if you just give us 4 cents a track. And that feels like what's going on here. Now, one thing that I thought was amusing was Disney said and OpenAI said that there will be, of course, restrictions on the kinds of things you can do with their characters. No, there won't. No, there won't. People are going to get around that, and there's going to be some pretty messed up Rule 34 type stuff out there. That's just like inevitable.
And inevitably, like the non-licensed versions, that stuff that's not on Sora, there's going to be wild stuff that's happening there too. So I can understand like Disney wants to have some sort of walled garden where they can theoretically control a little bit of it all. But I just don't think it's great for the business at all. I think it's too early in this process for people to start making these giant deals on their licensed characters. And it's the fact that OpenAI and these companies already stole a bunch of this stuff and adjusted it and were spitting stuff out. It's complicated and we won't get into it today. Instead, we'll do some actual follow-up on something we have a definitive answer on, which was way back in episode 620, we talked about this producer named Carl Rynch.
Oh my God, Carl Rynch, I remember this guy.
Yeah, and so basically he was a filmmaker who had done other movies beforehand, but basically was making a movie for Netflix and basically kept asking for more money and more money and more money. Sorry, it was a series, not a movie. And so we talked about this guy who just like, they were now suing him for all this money they'd taken from Netflix without actually delivering a movie. And now there was a verdict. Drew, talk us through what we learned.
Yeah, and I assume the verdict is, Drew?
He's guilty.
Of course he's guilty. Of course.
For scamming Netflix out of over $11 million over this series. And he faces up to 90 years behind bars.
Oh my God.
He won't serve 90 years. That's
I just love the idea of like, because I don't know how old this guy is, but he's probably, what, like 40 or something? 45?
Probably somewhere in there.
So I just like the idea of this dude being like that 90-year-old in prison and people are like, this guy's been here forever. Why?
He must have done something absolutely horrendous. He took a bunch of money from Netflix.
Yeah,
He didn't deliver.
He didn't deliver on a series. So what do we think he's going to serve? Like 2 years? One?
Yeah, it's tough. Trump can't commute this because it's not that it is a civil suit. So
is this something that was on his radar?
No, but things are often not on his radar. He's often trying to pardon people he has no ability to pardon. So so we'll see. It'll be much less than that, but also hopefully he did a bad thing. Like you should pay money if you do a bad thing.
The last time somebody with a name like Carl Rynch was sentenced to 90 years, it was at the Nuremberg trials.
Yeah.
This guy's got the most German name. Carl Rinch.
Carl Rinch.
Yeah, Carl Rinch. So you shouldn't have done that, Carl. I don't know what to say. Like, it's not like Netflix is going to miss that money or anything, but, you know, you can't do that.
You can't do that. No, that's bad. I guess the interesting angle on this story is like every producer, every filmmaker is kind of selling smoke for a long time. It's that delusional ability to say, like, oh, no, this is really going to happen. And you respect that. That's the chutzpah. That's the ability to sort of hustle and get things made. But you cross a line at some point. So where is that line is an interesting thing to explore.
I think the general magic trick is to get somebody to give you money. All the tricks are for there. Once the money comes, then if you are a producer, you have to then mush everybody together to get the next thing, to get the script, to get the green light.
Yeah.
But if you do nothing, which is not normal, then you go to prison apparently, or give the money back. I don't know.
Yeah. Famously, The Producers is about that. I mean, it's right. Just like that's the funny comedy version of this. Is this was not a comedy apparently, but you can imagine the comedy version.
Even
of this.
The producers put a show on.
They did. They put on a show.
They just wanted it to be a failure. This guy didn't even do that. So, and he apparently.
He represented himself, which is always...
Oh, no.
That's also the comedy.
Yeah. So our good friend Ken White, who's a former federal prosecutor, now defense attorney, and shows up on all sorts of podcasts and things.
And we came on our show to talk through legal stuff.
Exactly. There are a couple of things that just make his eyes roll in the back of his head in anger, and one of them is people representing themselves. You know, his feeling is like, 90% of the lawyers you get can barely represent you.
Yeah.
You need a good lawyer.
A doctor shouldn't perform surgery on himself either. So
No.
Yeah. You hear stories of like the doctor who was isolated in Antarctica and had to do surgeries themselves. That's why it's so rare because
you shouldn't
telling people around.
Yeah, but this guy isn't even a doctor. This is a patient doing surgery on himself. Yeah. it's just idiotic. Don't do that. No pro se, please.
Nope. We have two bits of feedback and follow up on the Script Notes book, including a mistake that we made that none of our many readers caught that's made it through into the book. Hmm. So what did Anthony say?
Anthony said, loving the book, such a wonderful distillation of your show. This is such a silly quibble. I almost didn't send it, but as a lifelong Trekkie, I couldn't let it go. On page 32, in the section at the bottom titled, Does This Story Travel or Stay Put? You illustrate your point with several iconic sets around which several popular shows are anchored. And for Star Trek, however, you call it the deck when it should more accurately read the bridge of the Starship Enterprise in Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, the Enterprise does have decks, but...
Decks are the floors.
That space is the bridge.
It's the bridge, absolutely.
Well, I don't know about you, John, but I think it's time to end it all. That is so embarrassing that we need to just...
We need to call back every issue, every...
Or die.
Or every volume that's been sold of Script Notes book and just bring it back.
Yeah. Hey, second edition, right?
There will be second edition at some point. Yep. We can probably fix that in the second edition. What I'll say is that if you have the book in front of you, flip to page 32, please carefully cross out the word deck.
Yes.
Write in bridge.
Yes.
And then it's at least you fixed your one personal copy.
And Anthony, I appreciate this. You're absolutely right. And I mean, the good news is people who love Star Trek are notoriously flexible about these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anthony is the nicest person in the world, by the way, because like, I feel like 90% of people would have just thrown the book across the room in anger. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anthony. And we're sorry.
It has sharp corners. It's not that heavy, but it has sharp corners.
Sharp
it
corners. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Another bit of follow-up from Charles.
I heard Craig speculate that the new Script Notes book is maybe the only book that exists about how to write screenplays for movies or TV that is written by two people or a person who's repeatedly done that job for decades. While he's correct that most are by people who have never repeatedly held the job, there is a book on screenwriting written by not one, but two people who have repeatedly done the job for decades. Might I bring your attention to Writing Movies for Fun and Profit, How We Made $1 Billion at the Box Office and You Can Too by Thomas Lennon and Robert Ben Grant.
Absolutely right. And Lennon and Grant are great.
Yeah, they're really lovely people.
That's true. I forgot. I forgot. It's a great book, though. That's a really funny book, too. It's different. It's not...
It's a very different book.
It's a very different book, but it's a very fun... Everything that...
It's much more memoir-y than ours is.
Yes, but those guys are hysterical. Love those guys. That's awesome.
Cool. All right. Let's move on to our marquee topic. This was suggested by none other than Meghna Rao.
Then it's going to be good.
Our beloved producer from the past. And the framing for this is sometimes, you know, in Hollywood, in this industry, you say a thing that covers over for what you actually want. So it's a euphemism or it's a stock phrase that sort of everyone knows the meaning of, but it gets away from saying the actual harder thing that you don't kind of want to say. So Megan's first suggestion for this was, no worries if not, which is a thing you say in an email, which just gives the other person an out because it's the end. So you don't come across as too demanding.
Yeah, it's not passive aggressive. It's just
Submissive. It's just basically, it's like a dog rolling over on your back.
But it's weasel wording because yes worries if not, really.
Yeah.
Yes worries. Why would I have asked you? Yes worries if not. It's actually a very useful phrase if you're asking somebody that works for you to not come off as too pushy about something, but they understand if you're asking for it, you do it. No worries if not is a nice way of just saying, but like, you know, yeah. I'm nice.
Yeah. And I've probably used versions of this for something with Drew saying like, this would be my preference, but if the other thing happened, that's also okay. So
that is like, much clearer than this.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. No worries if not is, I worry. I immediately start worrying if someone tells me to not worry.
No worries at all, I think, is an Australian phrase that came over to California. And so the no worries if not probably is a morphed version of that, which is sort of a specialized version. Hmm. So Drew, I proposed this to you on Thursday or Friday, and then you came up with a whole list of, I think you crowdsourced from your friends, a whole list of these industry terms.
Oh, fantastic.
And so Drew, if you could read us the term and then we'll have a little discussion about sort of what it actually really means and what the use of it is.
We're playing phone tag.
Yes. So sometimes you're just actually calling it what it is. Basically, we keep going back and forth. But also, there's sometimes a little bit of a passive aggressive feeling like, I think you're dodging me, or there's a reason why we're not connecting here. And because we're playing phone tag, I'm now just going to tell you in an email what it is I actually want.
I only use we're playing phone tag so that the other person knows that I called them back.
Mm, yeah.
Because sometimes I just wonder like, okay, I get a call from somebody. I miss it. I call them back. They miss it.
Yeah.
They call me the next day. I miss it. And now I'm like, did they know? Or is this like a second call because somebody didn't tell them?
And sometimes you forget, like, did I initiate this? Did they initiate this? Did you already have your answer?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
like,
I just want them to know I was trying.
Yeah.
That's all. I tried.
Next up.
Bumping this. A lot of these, ones are emails, kind of. So bumping this.
Bumping this.
I had to do a bumping this this week when, like, I've not gotten a response back on a thing. And I do need a response. And so, like, hey, bumping this because I need to know this thing.
Such a weird... So bump has become this multi-purpose word. And it wasn't around when I started. But then somewhere along the line, this bumped me became a thing in notes. Like meaning I was reading and then suddenly I was jarred and did not like something or did not understand something. It bumped me. And then bumping this also became... I think it might come from... like programming or something, like bumping something.
Sort of like push and pop. It's like you're putting it to the top of the stack.
Exactly. Yeah. You're bumping the stack. And so this then became like, I'm bumping this and I will get bumping this. I receive bumps constantly. Yeah. Like just, remember the thing? And it's actually a nice way of saying you never answered my question. So, yeah.
Which is related to the next euphemism here.
In case this got buried.
Yeah. So there's a little bit more passive aggressive about that. It's like here's the thing you didn't see. Actually, though, just today, Craig and I, you had an exchange about like you'd sent a long email with stuff for the next D&D campaign. And had I actually read the email fully and carefully, I wouldn't have made the mistake that I made.
But you know what? It got buried. No, but that's why in case this got buried is definitely passive aggressive.
Yeah.
That is just saying, I'm sure you have so many emails, but...
Well, what's fascinating about it is like it's passive-aggressive, but it's also like giving them an out.
That's the passive part.
That is the passive part,
Yeah, but it's aggressive.
Got caught in my outbox.
Oh, please. Yeah. I've never heard that one. And if I ever do, I'll be like, oh, please.
This has happened to me once or twice in real life where it's like I see a draft that actually just never sent. I did reply to them and I realized like, oh no, it actually never went through because it's just how stuff got threaded.
I would believe if somebody phrased it as, I literally never hit send, it's been the emails behind it, a window, another thing.
Yeah.
I would get that caught in my outbox. Sounds a little fishy.
Coming up for air after Yeah, Sundance, holidays, whatever.
Yes, coming up for air. I use that one constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly. I'll be coming up for air. When did that start? I don't even know.
I don't know. I'm sure we could do like a Google, you know, Ngram search for sort of like when stuff actually started like appearing in texts. But it's related to a concept of like submarining for me, which is submarining where you just like immerse yourself so completely in a project, in a relationship or whatever. It's just like you just disappeared off the face of the earth. And so you do come back up for like, oh, wow, the rest of the world is still out there. I just haven't dealt with all these things.
Yeah, there are these times where you are plunged into some process, and sometimes it's production, but sometimes it's you're doing promotion stuff or you're writing a draft and you have to just focus on that thing. But you tell somebody at this time, I'll be coming up for air and then we can sit down. And it's just not a great time now because I'm stuck doing all this stuff. That's a perfectly fine euphemism. It's not even a euphemism. Well, it's a euphemism.
Yeah. It's a stock phrase.
It's a stock phrase. Yeah.
So I remember, I think back when I was in Stark and I was like interning for somebody and another friend was interning someplace and we're talking about this filmmaker who said like, oh, I won't be able to do any of that stuff because I'll be doing sort of award season promotion stuff. And I'm like, really? Like, you really think you're going to be busy doing that? And
it's presumptuous.
It's presumptuous, yes.
Yes.
But that filmmaker was actually correct and I just had no sense of like, oh, you will, like you're going to lose multiple weeks just doing that promotional stuff.
It's insane. It's a job. Like, it's a job. And, oh boy, I can't say that I enjoy the job, but I'm not supposed to. Like, the actors, I think, are better at it. And also, just more people want to talk to them because they're actors and it's fun. And they have more practice with it. But it does blow my mind how busy it is. And I am often reminded by the women that I work with that it is busier for them because these events like hair and makeup, which, you know, like I always, like there's a lovely woman named Sue who does my makeup for these things. And that means just take the massive shine off his bald head and try and help his eye bags a little.
Yeah.
And it's hours in makeup, hours in hair, sometimes for the women.
For these women, not for you. You're correct. Not spending hours in makeup.
No. And I have no hair.
And exactly. Makes life easy.
Yeah. So they're waking up early and then there's like 4 hours of this stuff. Then they go to do the event. Then they got to take it all off. Then they got to, it is a job. It's nuts. Yeah.
Just needed to get ducks in a row on our side.
Yeah. So here's why you have not heard back from us. Like we know we need to respond to this thing, but we have not responded to this thing. So we're acknowledging that it's taken a while. Likely, in my experience, it's just like, there's a higher level person, there's a boss who hadn't read it. And so like the lower people like knew what their opinion was, but they couldn't actually say that until the higher level person did this. I just turned in a project like last week, which I know I will not hear anything back from until after New Year's, which is great and normal, but it's all waiting on the big boss to read it.
Yes, I will typically hear people say, just give us a few weeks to get our ducks in a row.
Yeah.
And our ducks in a row means get the sign-offs from the people that need to sign off. And that's, you know, that. I don't know why ducks in a row is the euphemism we use, but it's better than saying, just give me a few weeks. I'm not powerful enough to say yes.
This next one's a very assistant one. So when you're sending avails out, you sort of say, you know, like, let me know if any of these don't work and I'll see what I can open up.
Yeah, I love that embedded in there, Drew used the word avails, which is a very, I think, a specific kind of LA term as well,
avails.
Which is availability. It's like, when are there openings in a person's schedule? And so like Craig's avails are very limited. And so Drew is always checking with Craig's assistant for like when he's available to do things. I get busier at times too. And so my availabilities are limited. So specifically the phrase that you're putting out here, let me know if any of these avails don't work. I'll see what I can open up. What are you really covering for when you say that?
It's basically my boss has more free time than I'm telling you that they do, but I'm just giving you like limited windows to make us seem busy.
Yeah. There are these three moments that work from next week. Or literally any other moment.
Yeah. Sometimes you open with sort of misleading specificity, like how about 3:30 on Wednesday? But it turns out like really the whole day is free.
Yeah.
So
this also may be code for my boss is busy. These are the times he has available, but your boss is more powerful than my boss and he will move stuff for you. So it's a nice way of indicating,
you know.
I like this whole quiet assistant sort of like code. It's interesting.
Along those lines, something came up that won't be able to move.
Ooh, yeah. No, that's that's a court case probably.
Well, it's also like it's vague enough that it's like, oh my God, is it the person having surgery? Like there's just something.
I went to the personal immediately. I'm like, okay, this is not work stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the end of that. Won't be able to move. Yeah. Okay, that's not happening there. Oh, this next one.
Yeah. We were waiting to hear what the team thought.
I'll tell you what the team thought. The team thought no.
Yeah. Drew has written down here, slow motion pass, and that's what it is.
Exactly.
It's just like, we're passing, but...
We're waiting to hear what the team thought. And so either you have no idea because you're so low on the totem pole, and that means that they don't care what you think, and or you're pretty high up on the totem pole and you just want to blame your team for passing. Either way, it's not good.
Let's keep in touch in the context of a pass.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's no.
But we can still be friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No.
We don't hate you. It's just that there's that it's not not for us.
Yeah.
Same. It's not quite right for us at the moment.
I love the quite. It's not quite right for us at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all know what it means. It's a kind pass.
Means I mean, no.
Yeah. Rarely are you going to hear like a harsh pass where like they hated it.
Yeah.
They're never going to say that. Your reps are never going to tell you that.
Nope.
But sometimes that is the real answer. It's like,
they didn't like
not.
It. They didn't like it. They didn't like it. The end.
Or they didn't spark to it.
Yes.
Yeah, they didn't. We don't spark to it. I mean, but just the spark.
Yeah.
Ding.
Here's one that I added. We're looking for noisy projects.
Oh,
have you heard noisy as a good term?
I have heard noisy, yeah.
Craig, tell me about what noisy means to
you. Noisy means something that gets people buzzing either in town or in the trades or people in social media are like, zzz. Like, so K-pop Demon Hunters was incredibly noisy.
Yeah.
But there are also things that get announced as development projects that are noisy.
Yeah.
And then often what happens is years go by and the noise never turns into anything, but they like... stuff that gets people chattering.
Yeah, and the chatter doesn't have to be like entirely positive. It can get people upset and that can also create some noise. Just anything that feels a little provocative or not safe and down the middle of the road is good. And so we're recording this before Wuthering Heights has come out, but my anticipation is like it's a kind of a noisy title and whether people like it or hate it, it will get attention because of just the noise around it, which can be really nice.
Yes, yes, yes.
Drew, help us out.
We're not the right place for it.
Yeah. Sometimes what I like about this is like, basically like, that's actually a pretty good idea, but we just can't do it. I think it's sometimes a nice thing to say, which is not really accurate, but sometimes it's actually true. It's just like, yeah, that's a movie that someone else could make, but that's not for us.
I mean, really, that's like saying to somebody that, you know, asks you out, like, I'm not the right person for you.
Yeah.
I mean, just say, I'm not right. They don't like it. There's so many ways of saying I don't like it.
Yeah, but if you're pitching an A24 movie to Imagine, like that's...
Okay, but you won't even get through the door, right?
But this is sort of real talk here. When I will go out with a project, like there was a Mattel project that I was attached to, and so we would make our list of like, here are the places that seem like a good fit, but like a lot of other places would want it because they wanted to be in business with me, which is lovely and flattering. So I ended up pitching these places. It's like, you really aren't going to do this movie. And so it was just wasting people's time. And that's why I wish We're Not the Right Place For It was more obvious at the start.
If somebody is like, look, I know you're pitching something that is a Mattel thing.
Yeah.
We don't make things like that, but we want to hear the pitch anyway. They really can't then say after, we like it. It's just, we're not the right place for it. No shit. We all said that, and so like, but it's more like when they are the right place for it.
I think a 2026 goal for me, which maybe moved based on other stuff that I'm working on, but like, it's just to be a little bit more brutal about like, no, I'm not even going to do that meeting, that Zoom, because it's like, it's just, there's no point to it. Like,
there's no point.
There's no point.
There's no point. And then this next one.
They liked it. They just didn't connect with it.
Yeah, they didn't like it at all.
They didn't like it. No.
They didn't. I like it. It's just that I don't like it.
Yeah. I also hear them like, I wanted to like it, but I didn't.
They always want to like it.
Yeah.
It didn't fully land for us.
Right. Like, if a plane doesn't fully land, that means it crashes in a fireball. It didn't fully land.
We're looking for something camera ready.
Oh, please. No, you're not. Nobody knows what that is. Get out of here.
You know what camera ready is? It's like it's a script that's already written. It's not a pitch.
Yeah. You're looking for something camera ready. It's a script, a budget, a schedule, a cast,
yes.
a crew. Mm-hmm. I mean, please. We're looking for something camera ready. Yeah. Oh, God. Dumb.
Well told.
Oh, well told.
Well told. Oh, my God. I've gotten a couple of well tolds, and it's just like, I just want to like just turn off the Zoom and
commit seppuku. Yeah. It's so well told is what they say after you pitch them something and they don't want it and they were bored. They say, well told. Like, you did a good job putting all those sentences in the air with your mouth hole. We don't like them, but well told.
To me, that is like, you just saw your friends play and it was awful. And it's like, you were up there on stage.
Yep.
Wow, it's great to see you up there on that stage.
Yep.
Well told.
Well told. Oh, yeah. Like, you did it.
Yeah.
You did it. Yeah, well told. Oh, this next one is, I don't know. This next one's, it's bad.
It's bad. It's ambiguous. Like, it's not always bad, but
it's mostly bad.
Yeah.
Let's revisit after the holidays.
Yeah. Which holiday? Christmas 2000 and never?
Yeah.
Because... That's just like, if you want something, I mean, here's what happens. All of this stuff gets put in context once you do something that people want. Suddenly, there's nothing that could be faster. Like, there are three people that want this. They want it now. They want it 2 minutes ago. They don't want to wait until tomorrow. Here's an offer. It's on the table right now. And if you turn it down, it's gone forever. It's never, we really want this. Let's just not do anything about it for a while.
So the situation where it's not a pass, where it's like if you're talking with your reps about a project to take out or stuff like that, like let's revisit after the holidays. Yes, that makes sense. Or like, you know, going out after a director, totally. That's a thing. That's an absolute valid thing because you don't want to approach people generally like this week in December. It's just like everyone's busy with other stuff.
Yeah, and just fair.
Yeah.
I'll defer to the team.
What does that mean?
So what does it mean, Drew?
You have a disagreement about a thing, but you don't care enough to fight about it.
Mm.
You'll let other people sort of make the decisions.
Oh, I'll defer to the team.
Yeah, but the fact that you're actually saying it out loud means that you are stating that you have a disagreement with it. So it's sometimes a useful piece of information, but I haven't heard it yet, but now I'm going to my ears will be open for it.
For team deferral.
I want to be respectful of everyone's time.
That means...
I've said this on Zooms too, where it's like, this is going on a little long. We need to be done here.
Yeah, I want to be respectful of my time.
Yeah, and often you're saying that because there's people who are on the East Coast or in London and they're up, it's 2 a.m. It's like, let's just be done here.
Or not. Or everyone's in Los Angeles and this is boring and it's too much. The phone version, because... That feels like a Zoom thing, but the phone version that blew my mind the first time I heard it was, I'm going to let you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let you go. Like, I know you have been dying to get up this phone call. I'm going to let you get off the phone. But really, you weren't dying to get off this phone call. I am.
Yeah.
I'm hitting eject. It blew my mind. I was like, you're going to, thank you? For this lovely gift.
So my friend Aaron Gibson will make fun of me because I have this thing like we'll go to lunch and at a certain point this was great and she's like, wow, you just stopped the lunch. It's like, but I'm kind of done. I'm just trying to acknowledge the fact this lunch is over and we don't need to keep dragging out for another 15 minutes to sort of say goodbye. Like, this was great. And I think the problem, if I may, is
the tense. This was great, as in I unilaterally decided it ended before I said that statement.
Uh-huh.
You get no participation in
it. So Craig,
I would say,
correct me, how would you end the lunch?
Has been instead of was. Great. This has been lovely. It isn't...
Realistically, the constant presence of...
Sometimes I like to go, I've had the best time. What do you do next? What are you doing next today? Tell me what you're doing next.
Mm-hmm.
And then you trend.
Thinking future.
But obviously talking about what's coming right after this lunch gets everybody generally motivated to GTFO. But
Yeah.
What you do is nothing compared to what our friend Derek does.
Tell me.
So our friend Derek, let's say Melissa and I are out to dinner with Derek and Christy.
Yeah.
At some point, and it's never like the wrong point. It's sort of a point where things, he would just go, okay, I'm done. We're going. Let's go. Christy, we're going.
Yeah.
We've been at their house where like a bunch of people, like 10 people. And then Derek will go, okay, it's over.
Yeah.
And Christy is always like, Derek. He goes, what? They've been here forever. It's over. And it's actually awesome.
Yeah.
Because we all know that he just is going to pull the plug and that's that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah, I respect that. A little candor, a little honesty there.
I prefer the clean break.
Yeah. It's the opposite of the Irish goodbye.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I have the best Irish goodbye. You know my ghost strategy?
Tell me.
Because I love to ghost. That's my favorite thing. So I'm at a party and in my mind, I'm like, it's time. It's time for the ghosting. So I'll start moving towards the door and I'm hoping that at some point, and usually do, somebody's like, are you leaving? And then I go, no, I don't. I'm not Irish goodbying. I'm heading to the restroom, but I'll be right back. And then I go.
So they're worried about you. Like, Craig, he said he wasn't leaving. So something's wrong.
I say I am not doing it. So then if they don't see me, they're like, well, no, he didn't leave.
Yeah.
He said specifically he wasn't going to do that. He's somewhere.
Diabolical.
Yeah, but I'm gone. Yeah. You know where I am? In my bed.
No, Craig actually does. So he says that and then he goes to the bathroom. And he like locks the door on the bathroom and then closes it. So like it seems like he's locked in the bathroom. And everyone's like, what's happened?
Yeah.
And meanwhile, there's like a line forming.
Yeah. No, I lock the door, climb out the window. There's not enough bathroom windows to climb out of. That is the air duct of yeah. There's not supportive vents and there are not bathroom windows to climb out of. What a shame.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Let's get back to our passes here.
All right.
A project's too small.
Yeah. That's crazy, but sure. I mean,
sure.
I get it on some point.
I get it, yeah.
But then you probably wouldn't be pitching to a place where the project would be too small.
Yeah.
The next few seem to be sort of from like spec pilots or something. So like not enough of a hook.
Sure.
Okay. Just, the idea is not grabby. All right.
Not catchy.
Needs more of an engine.
Yeah. It's boring. The story doesn't go anyplace. It's just like you're just stuck in one gear.
You're not going to be able to write 20 episodes of this.
No.
And you're going to write two and then run out of stuff.
Yeah.
And two slice of life.
The hell does that mean?
I think it's not story driven in the sense of like, you know, there's not a compelling thing that's like moving you along. It's just like, it's a hangout.
Okay, so this is fascinating to me. So that implies that there have been a lot of people writing stuff that has been too slice of lifey. And I'm curious, like, why? Is it like a generational thing where like a certain cohort enjoys a slice of life kind of story?
I wonder.
Because I don't recall like this being a thing.
I've never seen that as a note.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a feeling probably a lot of like stuff that's geared towards younger people tends to be, you know, like 20-somethings hanging out.
Okay.
And maybe nice way to say nothing's happening.
I think maybe they should look at a little movie called Go.
Yeah.
Where things happened.
Yeah.
You know, slice of life. I mean, you could argue that After Hours is a slice of life movie, but it's tense.
Yeah.
It's stuff happens. Mm-hmm. It's not just like doop-a-doop-doop. Yeah. There were, but I will say there were some slice of lifey kind of, I mean, like Reality Bites was sort of slice of lifey back in the day. And the attraction of the movie was, look, it seems legitimate for people your age, right?
Yeah, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Fast Times was actually quite slice of lifey. That's true. That's true.
But listen, like, you know, comedy is on television, like, you know, Friends.
Well, sitcoms are a slice of life.
Everybody loves Raymond. Slice of life.
Yeah, sitcoms are just, because it's just the situation happens that week. That's all. It's the same. But there have been slice of life movies that are good. I guess maybe the problem is it's a pretty narrow target to hit. You know, your Cameron Crowe. Yeah, I could see you hitting that. But
indies tend to go more towards the slice of life, where it's just like a little small
thing. And sometimes that can drift into self-indulgent or boring. And that's a nice way of saying this was bad.
Yeah. And you have one thing here as studio speak.
Yeah. So Aline's assistant gave me this one because they tend to go out with very female centered projects and they will get the note back that the studios are looking for more male entry points, which means
I love this as a term. Incredible.
I need to talk to my wife about the male entry points. This is the worst.
I just talked about Heated Rivalry, which was full of male entry points.
Right. By the way, ever since you talked about Heated Rivalry, I've just been, it's one of those things like you buy a car and then you see that car.
Oh, yeah.
It's been everywhere. Like
everywhere.
On all the like conglomeration sites I go to with news, it's like, and then there's like this specific thing of why women are obsessed, like straight women are obsessed with this show. And so I started reading about it, but you were the first to mention.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad.
Those male entry points.
I snuck in there because it was about to blow up as a meme.
Listen, gay culture is always right there in front of everything. Yeah. And male entry points on that show, yes, apparently very important, but they're important for all men. It's not just gay men, straight men. We're all looking for entry points. This is the most horrible phrase possible for what it actually is intended to mean, which is, Drew,
and that we want more male characters so that men will watch.
Just say that male entry points, like you're taking something that's already a little bit and making it so much more. Just say like, you know, we
more dudes.
We want our stuff to appeal to both genders equally. This feels a little lopsided. And that's fine. That's a perfectly fine thing to say because audiences have demographics. Male entry points?
It also sort of feels like Netflix thinking about like, what are we going to put on the tile on the Netflix as you're scrolling through it? Because as a gay man, like my tiles on Netflix look entirely different than your tiles just because they're always like, if there's like one hot guy in the show, if it's like the 19th character, that's who will show up on my tile.
I actually have to look and see. Do you want to see what shows up on my... Because I don't watch Netflix that often, so I'm going to it right now.
Yeah, we can share screens and see. I rarely see Netflix on my computer, so let's see if it actually pulls up right.
Okay. So let's see. All right. This is fascinating. I have cool tiles. I'll share the screen here.
Excited.
Yeah. So this is actually like a...
That feels pretty normal. Yeah.
It's an interesting... Yeah, it's very normcore.
So like, but listen, like your Schitt's Creek has Annie as the lead character rather than...
So they do stuff like that, even
then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay.
So any situation where you're not seeing...
Got it.
Maybe the main star, but sort of a supporting person?
Right.
Is interesting.
Because they're like, you'll like this pretty lady.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, but like it is a, I mean, this is not a bad collection. I don't understand. I mean, well, they've got Man versus Baby with Rowan Atkinson. I guess I would probably like that. They probably would like these things. Maybe I should watch more of these things. All right, so that was mine. So let's take a look at yours.
All right, let me share my screen here.
Your collection of hot guys. Oh, this is not that different from-
It's not that different. We have the same tile for The Diplomat.
And for Man on the Inside. Uh-huh. And Nobody Wants This. And Wednesday.
Yeah.
You have The Baking Show. Oh, but your Frankenstein tile is different.
Yeah.
So your Frankenstein tile, they're like, I think there's some hot guys in the extras here.
Absolutely.
Mine just had the monster. You have Rowan Atkinson also, but you have K-pop Demon Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to say, it's not...
It's not radically different.
It's very, very similar.
Yeah.
Right. It's very similar.
Nothing is showing up here, but there have definitely been times where it's like, well, that's absurd that they're showing me that as the tile for this movie that that person is barely in.
Right, right.
But no, there's nothing that I've been scrolling through here that says like, oh, well, this is clearly just hot men.
Yes.
So what have we learned in our analysis of our discussion of stock phrases in Hollywood? Like, why do we have them? What good do they serve?
Well, they are illuminating about our business because I think in other businesses, people are far more... curt and direct because we have a lot of personalities and because it is a little bit of a, I don't want to date you now, but if you get hot next year, I might want to date you then.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is kind of shining everybody on and nobody wants to say no, no, no. They just want to be, you know, careful.
Yeah, we're a freelance business. And so you're constantly like looking for your next job, looking for the next thing. You're trying to, you're constantly dating. And so you don't want to preclude any opportunities. So you're trying to maintain relationships while also getting stuff done.
There's a guy who is a partner at a prominent production company that will not be named. And there was something that I had pitched them many years ago. Oh no, I'm sorry, I hadn't pitched them. It was a script I'd written that I didn't even know they got. Mm-hmm. And this guy loved it, but wasn't right for us, but loved it. Yeah. Years later, there was something I was doing that he wanted. And he was like, and remember, I loved that script. It was like the one that you didn't give me any money for.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's, but that's kind of the thing is like, everyone's always hedging.
Yeah.
Hedging their bets. Nobody wants to be mean to anybody. You might, that person could be your boss tomorrow. That's how Hollywood works. So totally. Everyone's careful, which can be frustrating at times. Because sometimes you just want the truth.
Yeah, it's not the extreme cliche of a Japanese culture, which they will never tell you no. It's not that at all.
Right.
But you do kind of have to learn what the things really mean. There's it's an idiomatic quality to it. And so if you are coming into this from a foreign language or you're neurodivergent, you may have a bit of a learning curve figuring out like what's actually really happening here. You may need to ask some people like, wait, what does that really mean? Because you could make wrong assumptions.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a great point about neurodivergence because Hollywood has a lot of not neurodivergent people, and particularly in the area of producers and executives, those people often have outstanding social skills. They are really sharp and instinctive. They are slippery.
Yeah, and they're also sometimes really good at managing up. And so you see like, how does that person have their job? Because they seem actually terrible at everything I see them do.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good at managing their bosses and sort of like understanding what their bosses want to hear, and they can deliver that.
And that is, you know, there is, I've always said, like one of the great unheralded skills in Hollywood is the skill of not being fired. And there are people that I think literally their only skill is they know how to not get fired.
Yeah.
And they're still there. It is a thing. And so if you aren't somebody that's particularly well attuned to subtleties and all those things, then yes, you can be very quickly confused by or outclassed by these people in these meetings, which, you know, I'm thinking of one screenwriter we both know in particular who's incredible, amazing, a legend, and so, so on the spectrum. And I have seen him in meetings. Absolutely. I mean, like, I'm cringing. I'm like, oh my God, I just want to go over there and help because he's just, he does not have meeting skills at all.
And so that's a case where, like, you're going to need to find reps and other trusted people who can actually help you interpret and sort of really understand what's going on.
Yes.
Versus, like, me at my point in my career, like, when I get on a phone call with my reps or even just emails with my reps, I can be very honest about, like, okay, that felt like a pass. That's this. Like, I'm ahead of even where they're at because I just know sort of like how things fit together. I know that like this project feels great right now and it's going to get really bumpy in about a month when this thing happens. I know we're not hearing back from this because of these other things, and that just comes with time and experience.
Yes, you will get better at it over time, no question.
All right, let's talk about some numbers. So I was listening to a podcast called Search Engine, which Craig, you don't listen to podcasts, but Search Engine is a really fun podcast that explores different topics. And a fun thing they do for their premium subscribers is they do an annual meeting, kind of like how you have a shareholders annual meeting and they just sort of talk through this stuff. So they have a Zoom and they have a Q&A, but they sort of make a presentation about like how the year went, how things are going. Maybe in a future year, we'll do that. But I thought on the episode today, we might talk through some of the numbers behind Script Notes.
Oh, good.
Both the podcast and the book, because I'm a big believer in transparency, letting people figure sort of see how stuff actually works. Craig, we just passed 15 million downloads all time for Script Notes.
Wow.
Which is absurd.
That's crazy.
15 years.
It took us a long time. But still, that's insane. 15 million downloads. Wow.
1.6 million downloads in 2025.
Wow.
We averaged 25,000 to 30,000 listeners per episode. And of those, between 2,000 and 3,000 are premium members who are paying money.
So that's information that I didn't know. I don't think that's a lot, like compared to like these big podcasts and everything.
No.
But it's just a lot in an absolute sense.
I remember many, many years ago, we were trying to understand our numbers. And you're just like, you know, we're Bon Jovi of podcasts. We're like, we're filling a stadium. And like, that's kind of true, but it's also—
It's a small arena.
It's a small arena.
Yeah, it's an arena. Yeah. But you know what? Madison Square Garden, right? Like, I think you got 30,000 people. You can fill MSG. It's pretty good. It's important to remember.
There
are a lot of people listening to it. That's good. It reminds me to say fewer stupid things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our most listened episode of the year was 673, Structure and How to Enjoy a Movie.
Okay.
Which was just a craft episode, which is great.
I like that stuff.
Our all-time highest episode is the one with Christopher Nolan.
Of course.
Which was only about double the typical numbers of, so it wasn't like, you know, a giant spike outside of everything else. Mm. We have 4,500 premium subscribers. Those are the people who are paying us.
Thank you to all of those people. That's awesome.
Which is great.
Yes.
And January is always our biggest month for premium subscribers. So thank you again for people who do it.
Oh, like because it's a Christmas gift.
It's a Christmas gift to themselves or other people bought it for them, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Craig, you'll remember that I think last year we were sort of harping on people like, don't do monthly, do annually because it just saves you so much money.
Yeah.
And so we bumped up the monthlies to sort of nudge people to doing the annuals and they did, which is great.
Great.
So everyone knows we zero out the budget every year. We're not a nonprofit technically, but we're just a corporation that deliberately does not want to make any money. We're an LLC.
We're a for-profit company that hates profit.
That's what it is. And at some point, we could probably do like a B corporation where like we're not.
I mean, we could convert to like a 501c3 kind of thing, right?
Yeah. We talked about that with like the
lawyers,
the lawyer people. And it's like the amount of paperwork involved to do that is just.
We don't receive a lot of tax deductible stuff. It's more that we just give it away when we hit the end of the year.
So before we started recording, we talked about sort of how we're giving away money that's left over at the end of the year. So, you know, we're going to be supporting Pay Up Hollywood and their annual survey. And also Entertainment Community Fund, which we've often supported over the years. They help out with basically everyone in the entertainment industry, not just Hollywood, but also Broadway and other artists, musicians who need help.
Yep.
So this last year, of course, we had the fires and they were involved in helping people recover from the fires.
It's great.
Everyone throughout. And so I've actually toured their buildings here in Hollywood. They have low-income housing for artists, and it's a great organization.
Yeah, this makes me feel good. And I do want people to know, because when we say 4,500 premium subscribers, they are paying us. But of course, we just so people understand, we use that money to pay for our staff and to make the show. Mm-hmm. But when there is money left over, and there is, then we donate it to good causes.
Yeah, which is nice.
Yeah.
We also had a book this year. So our book, we hit the USA Today bestsellers chart, which was certainly not a given.
Okay, but I do love how we hit it, though. It's perfect.
Yeah, which is...
So it is not the top 10.
No. So USA Today lists the top 150 titles
150.
Each week.
150. And we came in at?
149.
Boom. Suck
149,
it.
Baby.
Suck it, 150.
And so the USA Today list is basically all books. So kids' books.
Yes.
And because it's December, a ton of Christmas books are on that thing.
Yes.
So we came in above the most recent Harry Potter Christmas book. Excited about that.
Yeah.
We came in below the D&D Player's Handbook, which felt so wonderful and so appropriate and correct.
Never want to overdo that. I mean,
one of the other big titles of the week that we came out was Olivia Nuzzi, the journalist,
had
a book about American Kanto, which was the
RFK thing,
RFK Jr. stuff. And we beat her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She sold like 1,200 copies and we sold 3,129 copies our opening week.
Ooh. Well,
we crushed that book.
Okay.
So it was a good reminder that like just because something's in the news doesn't mean it's actually selling any books.
Listen, this book business is tough. But I mean, I always felt this about the book that we've done here is the kind of thing that just will sort of hopefully be an evergreen. And it just sort of, you know, over time people... And not because we want to make money, because we don't. It's because I think it's helpful. I think the book will help people. I do.
I think it will. So of the 3,129... the vast majority are the hardcovers, 2,400 of those, 300 ebooks, 350 audiobooks. These are just the North American numbers. It'll be a long time before we hear the UK numbers and sort of the other places that we've sold.
Yep.
But it's a great start. And so, you were on the email chain with the publishers.
Yeah.
They're happy with the start of this. It's not like the runaway greatest hit bestseller of all
time. It was not going to be.
But it's a super strong launch for this book.
Yeah.
We're on a track to earn back our advance at some point. Like around 13,000 copies sold will be have earned back the money that they already paid us. But Drew, we have some books that they've sent us that are like currently under your desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make a pitch for what to do with those books, because obviously we want people to buy books for themselves, which is great. But there's also probably a lot of school libraries, community libraries that also need books who don't have the money to buy these books. And so if you are a person who runs a local library, a school library, probably junior high school or up, I don't think a grade school library is going to be appropriate for our book, write to Drew, ask@johnaugust.com. Let us know what your library is. Provide some proof that you actually are this person who is responsible for obtaining books to these libraries. And we'll see if we can send you one of these books that we have here in the office. Because
I honestly feel like if somebody takes the time to pretend to be a library, I think they've earned a book. That's kind of cool. Yeah.
And we can send them to U.S. libraries because of tariffs and customs and everything else. It's going to be crazy if we try to send this overseas. Yeah. But for stuff here in the United States, we can send them to libraries. Because like this is a book that I would have gotten out of my school library if it had been there.
Of course.
Cool. Craig, any feelings about the numbers? Any surprises? Anything that you're still sorting through?
I don't know anything about the book business. So yeah. I don't know what any of this means. Mm-hmm. I do think eventually we'll earn our advance back.
Yeah, we will.
Which is just, you know, otherwise I'll feel
bad. Which is
bad.
Great, which is really rare, honestly, for a book to earn its advance back.
Then why do they make, then I don't know.
Here's the math behind things. Yeah. And I think this is the general stuff, and I'm pretty sure our contract is similar. So there's the list price of the book, and so that is like $32 for Scribner Notes book. Mm. Of that list price, we get $3.20. We get 10% of the first 5,000 copies.
I see.
The next 5,000 copies, we get at 12%.
Okay.
After that, we get at 15%.
Okay.
And so it's that $3.20 that we're earning on that story now that has to pay back our advance.
That's the recoupable part. Okay. So they're going to make money.
The publisher is still making money.
They're making money.
They're making money.
Got it.
And the bookstores are making money too.
Yes. Good. Then I'm happy. I just want everybody to be happy.
And an interesting thing about our book, like it was something like 50% of our sales were Amazon, but like a lot of them were not Amazon, which I think is also great too.
Yes.
Just the people buying through other places, including local bookstores. So we're excited about that.
Great.
If you still want a signed copy, there's a place you can order called Premier. Drew, help me out here.
Yeah, Premier Collectibles. And I can put the link in the show notes.
So Premier Collectibles has ones that Craig and I signed. But if you're in Los Angeles, you can also just go to Larchmont and Chevalier's Books has a few left that we signed on the day of our live show. So they're there if you want signed copies from me and Craig.
Yeah.
Let's answer some questions.
Okay.
Let's start with this first one about video podcasts.
Keeping an Ear Out writes, my question's about the explosion of video podcasts. I heard that this terminology took off because studios wanted to make videos without signing contracts with IATSE. Is that true? More largely, what's going on with the guilds in podcasting? Do any guilds cover digital content, and for what kind of labor?
So a couple things. First off, there's now a term called audio podcast because, we always thought of like podcast, well, of course it's audio, and then a video podcast is a separate thing, but now you actually have to distinguish it. So currently, Script Notes is an audio podcast. We may do some video stuff down the road, but you look at some of these podcasts with video podcasts, and they're not that different than a lot of like talk shows would be, or a lot of other sort of broadcast shows. Now Netflix is buying some of the Ringer shows and moving them over to Netflix. So video podcasts are in this interesting space where it's kind of like just TV. And so why shouldn't it have the same kind of rules as TV? So I can tell you that some of this stuff is already being covered by the guilds. And so the Pod Save America podcasts are covered by the Writers Guild East. And whenever there's a new market, you got to kind of figure out how are we going to handle it or treat it? Because you don't want to sort of come in with a heavy hammer and smash everything down before there's even a viable economic model. But you also don't want it to mutate into this thing that replaces what you're actually really doing, or that existing programs get reclassified as being video podcasts rather than talk shows or things where we already have Appendix A protections for. So we're going to sort of see what comes in this space.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with IATSE here. I mean, that union is I don't quite understand how they go about organizing and doing things. But the WGA, for instance, in this case, they have an organizing department. And the point of the organizing department is to go to podcasts that are prominent. And I think somebody said once, you know, the Writers Guild looks to represent anyone who writes things that move on a screen. Mm-hmm. And this moves on a screen. So let's organize these shows. And we can create contracts. Like the Writers Guild is not about coming in and saying, yeah, so you have a podcast and you employ a writer and you have to sign the same terms that we sign with Apple and Paramount.
Or Jimmy Fallon show, yeah.
We have the ability to create separate agreements. We do. We also have an agreement with news writers. We have an agreement with daytime writers and all that. So I think, yes, this is something that the Writers Guild could certainly do. And IATSE can absolutely shut stuff down if they want. I don't know if you can get around IATSE. At some point, they'll come for you. And when they come, they do have a hammer, a big, big hammer. And nobody wants to mess with that.
really, you look at a show like Last Week Tonight, John Oliver's show, which is terrific and great and has a big writing staff and a big production staff, and they are able to create an amazing show every week. You compare it to some of the video podcasts, which like are also creating a show every week, and they may not be quite to the same scale, but they do similar things.
Yeah.
And so this question of like, well, shouldn't they be treated kind of the same is correct, and also the business model behind it is different. That's why you need to make a separate way of thinking about the deal.
Yeah, we look at the delivery system compared to the work itself. Like, is this being delivered through television? Is it being delivered through theatrical? Is it being delivered through the internet? Is it being delivered through... So everything can get its own thing where the guild is not ignorant of the differences. I think in a case like this, this is a good area for the... I don't know what the guild's organizing department has been doing lately, but this would be an interesting spot to go.
So this is the thing that the guild's organizing department is going to be focusing on, and the East already sort of started. We also talked about verticals a few episodes ago. And that's another thing, which is like the guilds are now looking at sort of how we're treating those. And so WGA is, SAG is thinking about how are we handling this thing, because clearly... we can't just apply normal TV terms to it because like there's not enough money there for that to actually make sense. But you want to have some protections. You want to have
something,
a way so this area can grow, but also that people can make a living at it.
Yeah.
Let's answer one more question from Nicole.
I have a couple projects that my reps are reluctant to send out anywhere because I created each of them with another person. Their argument is that they're trying to sell me as an individual, and if I want to partner with someone, then they need to be able to sell us as a true writing partnership with our own joint samples and shared career track. And I need to commit to that forever. This isn't really something I'm interested in, and my partners on these projects aren't either. I'm not doing this willy-nilly. In one instance, my TV concept is about a person with a disability, so it felt important that I develop it with a friend with a disability, who's also a TV writer with credits. Are my reps right, and it's not worth trying to sell projects as a one-off partnership? Am I never allowed to work with my friends? Is there something I can do to make these one-off partnerships more appealing to my reps or to execs? And what's the best way to proceed here?
Yeah.
I think your reps are right. Yeah. I mean, look, these things aren't dead. If you don't want to have your career work as a team and you want a solo career or the ability to join up with anyone at any time, you need to create your own career first. If you sell something as yourself, it goes well, you can always go back to the people that have paid you and said, by the way, I've written a script with this other person, take a look at it, and they will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but first, you gotta kind of get going as yourself. And I'm guessing based on this question that you're not necessarily at that place yet.
Yeah. And so Nicole already has reps, which is great. And I'm reading this letter saying that they signed you as an individual and now they're trying, you have this thing you wrote with somebody else. And like, I don't know what to do with this because we've been trying to sell you as an individual. And now we take this thing out, it just becomes weird and difficult. And I get it. Like, remember, like reps want to be able to sell you to people and then give a consistent story about like, this is what she writes. This is the kind of things she's preparing for. This is the kind of shows you're trying to staff her on. And it's confusing if they're now trying to sell a thing which is written with somebody else. And so...
because then you are going to want to sell something by yourself and people will ask, well, we don't know what if Nicole's good by herself.
Yeah.
It could have been the other one.
And it's the same with writing samples. If they read this thing that you guys wrote together, they're like, but did she really write it?
Exactly.
Craig and I both know writing teams who've split apart and like they need to start writing something separately that is just their work so people can read it as just their work.
Absolutely.
All right, let's do our one cool things. My one cool thing is a Substack written by the artist Charlie XCX.
I don't care. I love
exactly.
It.
Craig, I'm impressed you know Charlie XCX.
Of course. How dare you?
I am so sorry.
I barely. Like what I just did is pretty much the sum total of my Charlie XCX.
So Charlie XCX of Brat. She did the music for the upcoming Wuthering Heights.
Brat Summer.
Smart artist, but so she has a Substack, which is just her writing about the things that are on her mind. And I just feel like more famous people kind of should do it because it's like, it's a chance to sort of have an unfiltered, like, this is exactly what I think. I don't have to go through a journalist to put it out there. So yes, it could be a blog. I mean, the Substack is just a common format for this kind of newsletter. But I just, I dig her for doing it. I think it's a smart approach for this because it's just... an unfiltered, this is what I think about, that one we'll link to is The Death of Cool. and it's like her opinion on how much she sort of values cool in a way that is felt a little, I don't know, she's ambivalent about it, but also willing to sort of acknowledge that, like, yeah, I really care about being cool. And so I really like that she's actually just taking the form and just writing in it.
I mean, it's blogging, right? Like,
yeah,
this is
you and I both. Yeah, it started as bloggers.
It's like a very early 2000s thing that people are doing mm-hmm. now. Like, this is a new thing. Like,
this is a new thing.
No, it is not. It is an old thing, but this is very bloggy. I'm looking at it. It's like the blog is back, basically.
The blog is back,
which is good. It means
it's not a visual medium.
Right.
It's
words.
It's just words.
Thank God.
Give her credit. She gets string together words that, you know, communicate what she wants to say, which is nice. And I don't know, if it gets more of us reading things versus just, you know, scrolling Instagram, I'll take it.
Yes. Complete thoughts with nuanced arguments.
Yeah.
It's Twitter just killed blogs. It just killed it. And now it's back because Twitter died.
And I'm glad Twitter
died. Yes. Dead bird.
Dead bird.
All right. Well, that's a good one. That's a good one.
What do you got for us, Craig?
Oh, baby.
I see the trailer here, and I'm excited.
So
I didn't know about it, so.
Okay, great. So at the Game Awards, which were held just a few days ago, the Game Awards are an interesting award ceremony because it's like, I would say, you know, 50% awards, 50% trailers and announcements. So it's very much, it's like, if the Oscars weren't run by the Academy, but rather just by all the studios, that's why it's an awesome award show, because really you're like, it's like the Super Bowl where it's like, okay, the game's great, but show me the ads. And there was a trailer for the new game coming from Larian Studios, which made our beloved Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
They had a prior franchise to Baldur's Gate 3 called Divinity. And in fact, Baldur's Gate 3 is sort of built on the Divinity platform. And they've announced essentially what looks to be like a rebootish start, but not like going back to the story, a new story, but like with a different level of polish and accomplishment because of technology. And the trailer is insane. Now, it is not a gameplay trailer. It is very clearly like a very highly rendered cinematic sequence. I mean, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, it's giving Wicker Man. It's giving,
And it goes so crazy. Like, I loved it. I loved it. And it was disturbing and beautiful and ugly and gross and amazing. And I cannot wait to play Divinity. And I suspect I'm going to have to wait for some time. And this was sort of the first time that they announced that this is what they were doing. So and they're saying it's going to be bigger than Baldur's Gate 3 in terms of the amount of content, which is mind-boggling to
me. Will we ever get Grand Theft Auto, or do they keep kicking the can? They'll keep kicking the can.
I think they're kind of married to September 26, right? They're saying November 19th, 2026. I think they have to hit that. They have to.
Okay. All right.
They can't miss Christmas. They're going
to. It's true. It's Christmas.
They have to.
Christmas,
in my mind, they are saying November 19th because they probably feel like they could absolutely be done by July. I mean, like at this point. Mm. Either way, by the way, they could release it on the worst release date of the year and it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It will make $14 trillion.
It will break the internet.
It is going to break everything, including me.
Yeah.
You know, we should be well wrapped in terms of shooting by then.
So you can just submarine into some GTA.
I have to do quite a bit of post-production, but still, honestly, yeah. Like
AI can do it by then.
I mean, oh God, how dare you? I can hear my editors screaming at you right now.
Oh my God. The best, the worst. That does look like an incredible trailer, so I'm excited to
tuck in and enjoy it fully.
Such smart people. We wanted to have the Larian folks on the show at some point to talk through the storytelling of that. So we'll see if we can find time to get them on.
Yeah.
That is our show for this week. Scriptness is produced by Drew Marquardt and edited by Matthew Cellelli. Our outro this week is by Nick Moore. If you have an outro, you can send us a link to ask@johnaugust.com. That is also the place where you can send questions like the ones we answered today. You will find transcripts at johnaugust.com along with a sign up for our weekly newsletter called Interesting, which has lots of links to things about writing. You'll find the clips and other helpful video on our YouTube. Just search for Script Notes and give us a follow. You'll also find us on Instagram @ScriptNotesPodcast. People have been sending through their their book purchases on Instagram. So Drew reposts those when we see them on the stories. It's great to see, you know, the book showing up in all different places. Craig, I don't know if I've talked about how the book in the UK is a little bit narrower and embossed and shiny.
Yeah.
It looks nice.
I mean, people in England deserve something nice.
They do. They need to have their own special kind of thing.
As well as Scotland, Wales,
yeah,
Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
I think I covered them all.
All the Commonwealth countries basically get the UK version.
Yeah.
So, except Canada gets our version. We have t-shirts and hoodies and drinkware. You'll find those at Cotton Bureau. You'll find show notes with the links to all the things we talked about today in the email you get each week as a premium subscriber. Thank you again to our 4,000 or so premium subscribers. You are superstars. Make it possible for us to do this each and every week. You can sign up to become a premium member at scriptnotes.net, where you get all those back episodes and bonus segments, like the one we're about to record on difficult collaborators. Craig, Drew, thank you so much for a fun show.
Thank you, John.